Hello and welcome again to Geraumt, your podcast for all topics of information and space and design. My name is Christian Lunger. I'm a service designer and an information designer. And today we're having a great conversation about data and how we need it, how we use it, what we can do with it to actually deliver great services out there. And I'm quite lucky to have a very, very qualified discussion partner. It's Jonathan Hofstadler. He's from Iona X, that's a French company that is basically an ecosystem actor that develops technology and then AI to cater for the needs of the transport and tourism industry. So all the topics about smart mobility, all the topics about visitor flows, guest guidance, these are the things they're looking at. And we met in Paris just last year when we had an excursion on the topic of AI and tourism with the Austrian Chamber of Commerce. And we had some of the really great presentations there. One of them was what they achieved for the Olympic Summer Games in Paris and how they worked with data spaces to interconnect different sources of data to deliver great services within the city that were necessary for smooth Olympic Games. Jonathan itself, he's the chief marketing officer and he's the one responsible for advancing the organization's strategic direction and the partnerships. So Jonathan, thanks a lot for your time and for, yes, this, I think, very interesting discussion we're going to have. Welcome to Geraumt.
Thank you, Christian. I'm so happy. Thank you for this introduction. I'm so happy to be here since we met in Paris and when we met again in Bratislava, and we've been following what you've been doing. I think it's very good that the final users that you are in contact with and also the deeper aspects of data and AI can meet in this discussion. And so I'm very glad to answer your questions today and to have this discussion with you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for that. We're looking at specific use cases you're handling within Iona X with lots of partners that are actually working together to achieve the results that you're targeting for. It's the Cyclops project at the moment, but as we talked a little bit beforehand, you said many use cases are even outside of EU-funded projects. But the one I think we're looking at first is the one from Isère Attractivité, where it's all about visitor flows and data. What's this project about or this use case about?
Well, there's many ways of going at it. And as you said in the introduction, you can look at it under the technological aspect, and the Cyclops project in particular is a digital project with lots of tech actors, which is a research project to try to bring seamless data management and AI to help maybe as a toolbox, let's say, people to work with data. But it's normally supposed to be agnostic to sectors, and therefore it needs to be able to adapt to the needs of all sorts of use cases. Mm-hmm. And we're very happy to be part of this project in a very tourism driven use case, which is in the French Alps on one aspect and in Mallorca on another, to show that we can use data and AI specifically for the needs of destinations, what we call in tourism the DMOs, the destination management organizations. And as you said, we're an ecosystem. The technology is there to serve the real needs that they have and see how we can bring better knowledge through data and new services maybe. And so the specific aspects that we're exploring in this first part of the use case, which is in Isère. For those who don't know Isère, it's very close to Grenoble. It's in the French Alps. It's a very nice area. And of course, it's so nice that sometimes you might have a lot of people, especially in the summer, who might want to go to a mountain lake or to specific mountain areas. And it's always hard to decide. You always want to promote your destination, but how much is too much? How much is enough tourism? And that's not easy to monitor, especially if you don't have the right numbers, because you can see sometimes the impacts that it can have on vegetation or inhabitants who say there's too much traffic going up the road or, you know, different things, trash. But how many people actually are we talking about? When do they come? Exactly the effects that it has or not. So if you want to take the right decisions for the destination, you really have to have the right information. You can't improve something that you don't know. And after that, you can start doing something else. You can start predicting what might happen with the data from the past. And you might say, well, every year at this time, there's a school holiday and it's the end of the week. And then we have a beautiful sunshine. And well, there's a high chance that with this event going on, there might be a lot of people. So let's see if we can try to encourage people to go somewhere else and to try to minimize the negative impact and make sure that it's nice for everyone. So the first step is really trying to get the right data, which is quite a challenge sometimes in natural areas.
What kind of data are we talking about, and who can provide this kind of data?
That's the right question to ask. It's really what is the right data. We have loads of data, and people don't even imagine the quantity of data that is generated every time we breathe, every time we move, every time we talk, even now, every time we do something, even satellite data, telephone data, all sorts of data is collected. Now, which one is the most useful? Which one is the right data? It's not the same in cities, and it's not the same in a mountain area. For instance, in a city, you can use telephone data. There's a high density of antennas, lots of people. And when they move, you can really monitor that. What we found out is that the destination originally was really trying to use the data from telephone antennas, because that's what they had to really be able to see that people were in a certain polygon, let's say a certain area between maybe three antennas. So you don't know the name of the person, but you know that there's 15, 20, 100 telephones in a certain area. And so you can say...
In a specific telephone way. Yes.
Exactly. So, and you know if these telephones are people who generally are in that area, or if they're people who come from abroad, or if they come from the Paris region, or, you know, so you can get some insights, maybe if they're tourists or if they're, you know, locals. Mm-hmm. But you don't have, you know, really precise data, especially if, well... you think there might be a lot of visitors, but it's just because there's a market in the valley. It doesn't use very well the three-dimensional aspect of mountains, which might not be the case in Paris, for instance. And so if it's there's a valley and there's a mountain, it's very hard to know if there's too many people on the top of the mountain.
Or in the valley.
In the valley, it might be the same.
Okay.
And so this is why... the data that we had originally was not necessarily the right one. We needed to cross it with other types of data. And I think this is really the main message I would like to give through this podcast is there's not one size fits all. However, the only thing that we know is that it's much better when you have a choice, when you can use open data, non-open data, and you have a lot of choice on different quality of data, different prices of data. And so the more you have the choice, the better decisions you might take. And so this is what we're trying to do. First, the first work we had to do was assess all the types of data that we could get, certain in the right zones. And then after that, there would be all the work of trying to cross that information to really get the right algorithms to take the right decisions and put it on a map, for instance.
You mentioned telephone data. What kind of other data did you use to cross-reference? So, you know, for those listeners that are not really deep into the data aspect, what is the kind of data we're talking about that would actually be able to cross with, like, the telephone data that you
Yeah, for sure. So there was other areas that didn't have the telephone data. It was not in the contract that ISER had. But we still wanted to monitor this. So we were thinking on what we could get. And there's a lot of open data from satellites, Copernicus, for instance. But they're very complex data. It's open and it's free, apparently free. But actually, to work that data, you really have to know what you're doing. And we advised Isère Attractivité to work with a French startup from the French tech ecosystem, which is called Murmuration, which crosses the satellite data on different indicators with Strava data, which are traces from your digital apps, also echo counters that might be on the field, different indicators that they have, and they manage to work that and see the impact on the vegetation also. You would be quite impressed, but imagine you have a lot of people going on a path. And 2 days later, the satellite passes and can see the impact on the vegetation. So it's not real time, but let's say you can see 2 days after the impact.
Which is quite close.
Yeah, it's quite good to take decisions and to actually monitor at least. So we were really crossing some of the information. On some polygons, like on some lakes, mountain lakes, there might be a campground or a cafe or different things. So we're looking into also the possibility maybe of going and exploring some payments data from credit cards that can tell you if there are lots of people buying, I don't know, ice creams, or if they were buying more, housing, etc. And it also can help us discriminate. So in a whole lake, if we have 50,000 people, but we have 20,000 that we can monitor in the northern part of the lake, well, we have a good idea that they might not be in the southern part of the lake. So it gives us also information. We have to be quite smart and to try and take hypotheses and try to see if they verify with different algorithms.
So it's not just about getting the data. It's about the, let's say, smart analysis as well.
Yeah,
because it has to deal with the circumstances that you mentioned. That data in itself cannot tell us anything. You have to really smartly analyze it.
You have to take a hypothesis and then try to see if it verifies. And if you're missing some, your blind spot, then you try to see if there's any source of data that can actually tell you if it's true or not. So this is why we find ourselves in a situation of being detectives. And then after that, we need some data scientists that can help us. And in the case of Cyclops, sometimes some very nice tools which help even non-technicians to get insights, even though the data is itself, but the information from that data is sometimes we need some tools to be able to see what is there.
If you have quite a nice website where you explain the project, and you wrote there in Isère, this means, in Isère, it means detect peaks in attendance before they become critical, identify undervisited areas to promote alternative offers, improve communication with visitors during their trip, and support long-term planning with reliable, up-to-date insights.
So exactly.
The thing you were talking about is not just analyzing data from now, but from back when, and then bringing everything together. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So what you do is you try to build an algorithm that gives you an information out of that data. Mm-hmm. So first you try to work on the past, and then once you have it, you verify it on the present to see if what you're actually predicting is true. So you go on the field and you say, there should be this. This is what I predicted, and this is true. And then you try to fine-tune that to see if it passes the reality check of the of the present. And then after that, well, you continue and you try to forecast to say how you think it might be. And in this stage, we're not there yet on the Isère side, but we are trying to get as close as we can to the present and analyzing the past. It depends how much data you have as well. But sometimes you're starting also to get access to some data, but you don't have the historical data. So sometimes you have to wait for a season to pass to be able to really draw conclusions. So this was the case of last summer where we were starting to collect some of the data, and now we are starting to be able to have some of the indicators we collected last summer. Now, the thing is, one part of the use case was getting the information in one dashboard or tools that enable us to get that information. But now the idea would be also, and the project ends at the end of the year, so this is really what we're going to have to work on in the coming months, is to see how we could also, once we attain what the destination itself considers the optimal amount of visitors, okay? I didn't say it's under or over tourism, etc., but it's just what is the right amount of tourism. When it starts getting close to that limit, well, it's to trigger like a red flag and to insert in the tourism information systems. We have a partner called Apidae Tourism, which has a lots of points of interest and offer related tourism data. Mm-hmm. And so any solution, which is the main partner leading this this use case for the dashboard and their solution. Well, once the information is on that dashboard, well, the idea is to trigger a message in the tourism systems to be able to tell all the tourism offices, but also all the apps, all the websites, all the different projects which actually use the data from that database, that there's a high chance that this weekend, for instance, or for the dates that you're looking at, there will be a lot of visitors. And so we would advise maybe some other similar places that you might like. And so these similar places have been pre-installed in the tourism information system by the destination, so that if these alerts happen, then we have maybe two or three other alternatives that we can recommend. And the idea behind that is to try and see if it has an impact really on the how many people are coming, and if we can divert some of the flows to really nice alternatives that they would actually like much as the same, but they might not know much about. So and for the experience as well, to monitor if it has an impact, if it's a more positive experience, because you are in a place that is not overcrowded.
Within this project, does AI play a role within this project in data analysis or in other roles?
It does. So without being too technical, there's different places where AI can happen. In the dashboard, it's a dynamic dashboard. So you can ask questions to the data. Let's say you can talk to it.
Yes,
that's the idea. But also in the Cyclops project, we have a AI marketplace where you can test different algorithms to the same data. So some algorithms might work better than others for different data products. And so you are able to play, let's say, with different algorithms that you can find in the marketplace. People have a hard time already thinking that we can have non-open data that is in data marketplaces, but there are also actually algorithms that can be shared. And this is going to also help, I think, to really get as much out of data as we can, because people have experienced that some algorithms can work very well in one place. For instance, if what we do in Isère is conclusive, it can be actually an algorithm that can be used by, I don't know, other destinations like the one we're doing in Mallorca as well, or other region in Austria, for instance. And there's no reason why this algorithm would not work if you're using the same type of data. So this is how we're using AI. But I think we're just starting, and there would be lots of other uses. Some are to try to reconcile different data products that are calling the same thing, but they're a visitor here, is a tourist here, and it's a person there. Well, they might be the same object. So AI is there to help reconcile the data products as well. So there's lots of little tools like that that can help.
I like that you kind of formulate it. You can talk to the numbers because if I think about it, I mean, how many people, if they are presented with numbers, do not understand the numbers. So I really have to say, in order to make the whole system work, you still have a couple of human decision makers, and playing by numbers, I think, is quite important. So if you have like a translator who delivers the numbers with the correct story so that people do understand, and by understanding, making the right decisions, I think that's actually quite a big benefit of AI in the future of the whole data management, data topic, to be honest.
Yeah, it was mandatory in the Cyclops project to have a human in the loop, and I think it's a good thing. For instance, you know, the machines can tell you or that you will have a lot of, you know, a certain nationality of people that are there. And on the field, really, you don't understand why all of a sudden you have this peak, you know, of travelers coming all of a sudden there. And it might be just there's a highway that was, blocked, and then people are taking another road and then coming back on the highway, and it enters your polygon of data. And so you're studying, you know, this mountain lake, and you don't understand why all of a sudden you have this peak. And if you don't have this human that can have a critical view on what is there and saying, no, it's not that. It's this other, part that I hadn't anticipated. The algorithm can't know itself. So I think our human intelligence can do that and then take the right decision and say, okay, please discriminate this information and not don't use it in your calculation and then give me another answer. So different things like that, I think, is going to be useful. And the people also know the destination much better, especially like with the alternatives. This is why we didn't want an AI recommendation. The locals know the destination really well. And also to decide what is the right amount, the optimal amount. It's not an algorithm that decides. It's not even an average. It's just the amount that the locals, you know, decide that this is what they want to have. It can be a political decision, economical decision. It can be just a physical decision on the number of parking spaces that are on the parking lot or whatever. But it needs to be a local decision.
I think it's a good time now to bring in a terminology that kind of resonated a lot with me, and that I actually heard the first time when we met in Paris, and then of course again in Bratislava, and it's the terminology of data spaces. So I already came with a picture that everybody's talking about AI. And everybody is talking about services they can do with AI, but nobody is talking that in order to provide good services, you need data. And you actually, and that is what Aona X stands for me, you actually have taken this whole idea a step further. It's not just you need data, but you need data from many people, from many organizations, proprietary data. And you naming them data silos. So you are promoting, even on a European level, to create data spaces. So integrating data to deliver better services. I mean, you already mentioned at least 5 to 10 different data sources alone for the ISER project, transport data, marketing data, satellite data, mobile data, data from tourism providers, from travel agencies, and so on and so on. All people who actually say that is my data. And this is like the big change for me that I came away with from the Aona X presentations is we have to integrate and make these data spaces. How important is it from your point of view for these kind of projects like ISER, like Tourism Flow, a specific use case?
There's different levels. There's the meta level and then there's the local level. And I think both are interlinked. As we're in the digital world, digital sovereignty is a question we hear on the news, and we know that these are big things, big numbers, big investments, lots of big players. But at the same time, what does it mean in our everyday life? So I think we'd really need to look at both. To be quick and not so technical, I really think that we need to think not just of data for the sake of one use. Let's say you have a connected watch, you have a connected even coffee maker or a connected object. The number of connected objects is growing exponentially, and the data generated from all these connected objects, including, you know, cars who generate much more data now than telephones, and we know how much telephone data is used, and all the apps that you have, and you know, the telephone itself is full of captors and generates lots of data, but cars even more. So we have more and more data produced every day with the rise of IoT, they call it, the Internet of Things. And so, well, if we just have the use just of this connected watch or the connected coffee maker, well, we only use it for, you know, making coffee or tell the time or etc. But we need to think of the reuse of that data. Otherwise, it's no use storing it on servers forever and ever. And also, data like monetary flows is something that actually has value if you share it. If you keep it on a server forever and no one sees it, it might be the best information ever, but it has no value. So the more you share that, the more you create value. And so the real valuable data is the one that is the most shared and reused. And so this is also why people did open data in the first place. But some data you can't have in open data. It can be because it's personal data. It could be for lots of reasons. And so we don't call it closed data, but it's non-open data. Let's say you need to have a consent, you need to have a contract. But today, 80% of the data is stored on servers and is not shared, especially industrial data, not the data that you can scrape on the internet, but data that is produced when you pay something, when you, you know, phone someone, when you go somewhere, you generate lots of data. And so that data is not shared. And there's a lot of value in the reuse of that data. It needs to be sure that you respect some rules. So that's why you need to have a contract. And therefore, data spaces are not spaces. I think in German, it's translated as a data room. And a room is generally closed. But it should not be considered as a silo. It's more of an open space. So like infinite space, open. And interconnected. So by using standards like we use in the banking world or other environments that have been highly standardized, like aviation and others, we offer the interoperability. And if you have, electrical mobility, electrical cars, for instance, you know you're using data from the energy, from mobility. If you're doing that to go on a holiday and you want to monitor how many tourists are going with electrical vehicles, then you can also use it for tourism. So you can see that if it's blocked in a silo, in an industry, in a sector, it doesn't go out and it might be useful for lots of uses. So this is why the concept of data spaces is actually serving other strategies that we have at European level, which is the AI continent strategy, which is our European AI strategy. And another strategy, which is the data union strategy. And it's the free flow of data in Europe. And like we have a Schengen in Europe, but we have a Schengen for data, where it's not, you can go anywhere, share with anyone, but under certain conditions. There are certain rules. And it's not a closed environment. It's an open environment, but where you are sovereign. That means that you can choose with who, how, and, you know, under which conditions that you are sharing that data. And so you can know what it's being actually used for. So this is what we're trying to do. So EONAX is a data space. It's not a data silo. It's not a data lake or platform. It's an ecosystem where it's decentralized. That means the data is not stored anywhere on our servers. It's stored at the source. Everyone keeps their data where it's produced. So we know it's right. It's not a copy of that data. But then what we do share is the metadata. That means the data description of what is in the data product. What can you find in this data set? And also the rules. That means what are the rules that we want to apply to this, to whom, under which conditions, etc., how long. And so this is a policy that is readable by machines. And therefore, you can share even with people that you don't know. We're actually building an even bigger environment at a European level with Austrian partners, Spanish partners, Greek partners in Lapland, etc., with a large project, another EU project, Deploy to Earn. And we're building the common European tourism data space. So EONAIX itself, it will be integrated in a federation of data spaces, and you will have the discoverability of that data at a European level. And there's the same thing in mobility happening. And the good news is we will have a governance of all of that with countries that are involved and a European tourism strategy, which is coming before the summer. And so I think the pieces of the puzzle are coming in place, but you've probably heard of GDPR, Data Act, AI Act, all these legislation. Well, now this is becoming operational. And so that's the meta level. Now, for Isère, what does that mean? Well, it means that they will have more choice and they will have better indicators and they will be able to benchmark. They will be able to use maybe something that has been done in another European region, or be them the ones who will test solutions that can be useful for others. And so it's the replicability as well that will be used. And if we want to tackle large challenges at a European level as a European destination, well, we need these infrastructures. There are infrastructures like bridges or roads in the real world, but for the data economy, which is normally, if we do this, we should generate about 900 billion euros every year for the European GDP. So it's lots of money as well. The data economy produces more money than the oil economy. It's a renewable resource. But at the same time, it's also there to help tackle some really large challenges like environmental transition, better traveler experience. How do we deal with disruption? How do we offer travelers really concrete improvement in their travel? So it's competitiveness as well.
Did I understand it correctly that if we're looking at the Isère project, they're not actually creating their own data space, but they're connecting to yours and adding their own data to it. So, but they can work the other data that is there already to improve their own services. Or are you actually creating their own like data space or one for the tourism industry?
So
is this oversimplified?
No, that's true. No, not at all. Isère, we are hosting some of Isère's data so that they can test. So they will be the ones helping us for the final solution to really tell us if it's useful for them or not as a destination. They're bringing also some of their needs and their data, etc. Mm-hmm. There's other partners, as I mentioned, in Solution, Apidae, that are bringing some of their expertise and data. And I didn't mention another partner, but which is in the PsychOps project, which is Avoris. Avoris is a large Spanish travel group. They have airline companies, hotels, etc., travel agencies. Well, they will also be able to reuse the benefits from this by recommending better destinations to travelers. Because when you're a travel agency, you might know that you need to go to this and this place in Europe. So in Mallorca, you can recommend certain beaches, different places to go. But if you're actually recommending somewhere which actually, with the information we have, is overcrowded, well, it's not a good recommendation. You can recommend it another day of the year, but not in that time which the tourist, your client, is going. So the local destination, of course, is doing it for themselves. But if that information is spread out in data ecosystems like EONAIX or even at a European level, we can actually get work on the demand and on where people are being sent, even by professionals who are recommending places, or by AI if we're using AI assistance. So yes, we're reusing the EONAIX data space, but let's say that we're in the background. We won't have an app or a site, or you won't see us, but we will be fueling, let's say, the data and behind, trying to get as much good information to the right people at the right time.
Mm-hmm. What I was thinking, because I'm still, this is the impact your presentation had to me in Paris, when you showed us how many, the data of how many organizations you actually brought together to manage the delegations during the Olympic Games. I was just wondering if actually this data is available now, and there are the rules to use this data. If, you know, the bigger, the more use cases you add, the more partners can actually gain by adding their own data to the system, like Isère. It's not just about visitor flows. Now there is lots of different travel organizations that can connect to it. And you don't actually create data for managing visitor flows, but you're creating data spaces, and managing visitor flows is just one of the benefits you can do with it.
Exactly.
And the more big partners are connected to it, the broader the possibilities you get in professionally managing your own destination, different aspects. Is that correct? Is the understanding correct?
It's very much correct. And I think you've understood what we tried to do. We started with, only six founding members, which got together and were working on the use cases. I'll mention them quickly, but it's Accor Group, Hotel Group. There's Marseille Airport, Air France KLM, Amadeus, which is a big travel operator, Group ADP, which is the Paris airports, of course, Charles de Gaulle and Orly, but also 30 airports in the world. Group Renault and SNCF, okay, you start with some large organizations, but now we have, let's say, around 40, and I think very soon in this spring, we should attain around 50 organizations across Europe, not just French, but we try to do the 80% that actually will solve most of your needs. And then, of course, for your use case, you will still need to go and get maybe a 20% of local actors that need to be added to your use case. But we can't know in advance, and I think no one, when they come in a data space, can know all of the use cases and all the data needed. Therefore, you come with an idea and a project to start with, and you start with that. But then very rapidly, you start seeing that, this information is also interesting for this and this. And this is where we need to have an association where connections can be done, networking can be done, business relationships as well sometimes, but also trust. I mean, you trust people when you know them. So this is why we create this ecosystem. And for us, the technology is just there to serve that collaboration. It's less data sharing, the data collaboration. We've also seen very recently, we were quite happy, that you can have data exchange that goes in both ways. That means we don't have to have something that is sold to each other, that I sell my data, but I can have something that you want and you have something that I want. And so if you give me this, I give you that. And this is very encouraging for us. I think there's lots that can be done if we go in that direction. And our idea is really to facilitate the discoverability. That's one step. And then the accessibility of very good information to take the right decisions, either to optimize processes. There's lots of money or improvement in the environmental impact if we do that. But also to enhance services, to create new services that we couldn't do before. Because in travel, the traveler was always the only point of contact of all these actors. But now if we start to collaborate, then the destination itself, the transport actors, the hotels, the activities, etc., they all get together and then they start exchanging information for the travelers. And so when there's a disruption, well, then it's much better for the traveler because people can actually find solutions for them instead of them having to find all the solutions. So this is really what we're working on.
I would like to finish this podcast, although I think we could talk another hour easily. I have so many questions, but I would like to finish this one again with a reference to the use case description on the website. One of the goals is to deliver practical tools for local authority and tourism managers. I know the project is not yet finished, but could you tell us what kind of tools we are talking about that would be practical for the daily management of visitor flows that you're aiming for, and what the future will bring for this project and similar projects?
Well, thank you. I think if you're really, really interested and you want to deep dive into it, we actually, with the project, have a training program that you can look into. That's really if your destination and what we've been talking about resounds with you and you want to go into it and really learn about it. But if you just want to have a bit more knowledge, we have about 40 tools. Most of them will be open source. And the toolbox itself should be able to integrate different tools if they have certain requirements. You should see this toolbox more like software that you would use on your computer. It's not going to be a cloud-based, SaaS platform, something that you can install. But you will find, for instance, different tools like being able to query data with natural language, like we were saying before, and just ask a question, simple question, and it looks into the storage if it can find the answer. If the answer is there, like what is the temperature on this date, and there's a data set that has that, so it just gives the answer. But the more interesting part is when it doesn't have the answer in only one data set. Let's say you have car accidents on one side, and then you have weather on the other side, and you want to know if there are more accidents when it's raining. Well, then the tools should be able to create a pipeline that actually correlates or not the fact that there are more accidents when it rains. And so This is the interesting part for non-technicians, that you could also try and query different things. For data analysts or data engineer, it can also facilitate their work and go a little further or faster. So we really think that in these 40 tools, if they're combined in the right way, it's good, but you don't have to look into the documentation of all these tools. The idea is that the tool itself will, the box itself will orchestrate itself and get the tools to work together and give just the right answer to what we're looking at. So this is what we want to achieve.
We focus on the visitor flow aspect in Isère. Does that mean, as a tourism manager, I get a tool that analyzes the data and gives me predictions on, let's say, what date there will be overcrowding, and for this day we should provide alternative offers? I mean, we in Tyrol, we know on Saturdays, on the high travel weekends, we know where the traffic jams are. And it's the same for, let's say, tourism offers. We know certain tourism offers are overrun at specific days. These are the obvious ones. But it seems like you can find out the not so obvious ones and still plan tourism offers that activate once you get an alert. That's how you name it here, automated alert. Is that correct? Yeah. Is that how I can understand it?
The impact is multiple. If you're a tech provider and you want to sell a solution to destinations, you can use this toolbox and sell a product, let's say, to DMOs. But if you're a DMO that actually has, the resources to actually work on data yourself, you can use this tool and start checking on your tourism observation board if it's actually, the right information. Can you know more things around with your data? But as we said, once you trigger alerts and you start deciding to have an impact on what you see, then there could be other destinations or even private actors. Let's say you're getting a notification on your phone, in your car, or anywhere on a website, anywhere that you're having this information, or at a tourism board, when you come and get information at a desk with a human being. Well, if someone tells you, oops, we have an alert that there's a high chance that there will be too many people at this place on that day, we would rather recommend these other places. You can be the tourism board itself, but you can also be a private user, you can be another destination, or even a travel agency recommending that. You will give a better recommendation because you have that information you didn't have before. So this is what we're trying to see, is what is the small thing that really can trigger the most impact for destinations, whoever is actually the one working with the data.
Excellent. Thanks a lot. I finish this podcast very shortly. Just wanted to tell that I will put the links from Iona X with information to the use cases into our show notes. And as always, if you have recommendations, questions, just write us on podcast@geraumt.com. Jonathan, final question. Do you have a good reading tip for our listeners?
Oh, it's a reading tip which might not be so fun for some, but if the topic of data spaces interests you, even philosophically, on what it means for data governance, because in the digital world, there's the same governance than in our real world. And I think it's quite interesting. Well, I would recommend reading a short text, but you can find it online. We're part of the International Data Space Association, and there's a manifesto that was written, which is the Data Space Manifesto. And it really gives you, I think, the rules, but it's the foundation, let's say, of the philosophy behind data spaces, of not having one actor take it, all the value, to be fair, to the security. And I think it says it all in a very short document. So if you agree with what has been said here, and you think that the future of collaboration, collective intelligence, etc., resonates with you, I would really recommend to read this this text. And I think a lot of it resounds with what we're trying to do in AeonaX. This is something that applies even in Asia, in America, and everywhere. I think there's lots of people who are seeing that there's another way of dealing with information in the digital world. And so if you agree with that, I think you could read it and you would like it.
Great. Thank you. We will put the link in the show notes as well. And Jonathan, thank you very much for your time. It was a lot and not enough if we consider like the topic. But thank you very much for your time and all the explanations about data.
Well, thanks for having me. And glad to answer any of your questions. We have also our own podcast, which we launched this year, called Ecosystem. And lots of these topics are explored in lots of detail. But I was really happy to come and answer your questions and glad to have more discussions in the future. Thank you.